The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. We're into another week. It's Monday the 26th of January 2026 and you're very welcome along to the programme. It's always a pleasure to have you on board here. We've got a packed couple of hours to keep you informed and entertained. And we want you involved in the conversation as well. 086 60 25000, that's our WhatsApp and our text number. Very familiar number to you now at this stage, but we have people tuning in new all of the time, so we want everyone included. And if you want to give us a call, 07491 25000, the team ready to take your calls right now if that's how you want to pass on your comment or your information. And we're interested to hear of anything you think that it's worth talking about, stuff that happened over the weekend, acts of kindness, anything at all, you know yourself. And don't forget to email comments at highlandradio.com. And if you're listening to the podcast or watching back the show, get involved, or the overnight replay for that matter. We want you having your say, whether you're listening live or not. And of course, you can watch the show as always on the YouTube app at home, on your big screen or your Fire Stick. You can take that with you, of course, on your mobile devices. We're on Facebook and we're on X. And we're going to hear calls later in this hour for Donegal County Council to come off X. A local councillor is making that call. Why? Well, we'll find out, should they? Let's see. Sad news from, I was going to say the world of journalism, but just the county, the passing of Paddy Clancy. Paddy Clancy was a very, very well-regarded, highly recognised, highly respected journalist. He was a very regular contributor to this show and in its former guises as well, but also to the newsroom. He was often attended courts and passed on court report information and other little tidbits through to us at the newsroom. Of course, he was the voice of the papers on Morning Ireland for quite some time, but had been involved in journalism and newspapers and radio, but newspapers at all levels, and was very highly respected. But very sadly, he passed away at the weekend. And the Taoiseach led the tributes to Paddy Clancy, the journalist and broadcaster whose death has been met with deep sadness by family, friends and former colleagues. A native of Sligo, Paddy, who was 82, lived in Ballyshannon and had long made Donegal his home. He passed away at Sligo University Hospital on Friday. A former journalist with the Sligo Champion and also the Donegal People's Press, he might be best remembered for his time presenting, it says in the papers, on RTE Radio 1, a slot he made his own for over three decades. In a social media post on Taoiseach, Micheál Martin said, Mr. Clancy was an enormous presence in Irish journalism for over six decades. His distinctive take on RTE's morning paper roundup was essential listening, he said. And Paddy, of course, I would imagine, I don't know, but I would imagine that, I suppose, when his time was done with RTE, he could have come back to Ballyshannon and put the feet up, but still, you know, a news hound, someone very much interested in news and continued to gather news and spread it out there as well. So obviously something he was incredibly, incredibly passionate about. And as I say, a very regular contributor to us here. Right now, someone's been fiddling with the papers. They're out of order. Yes, they are. Someone out there was. On to the Irish Times, and the state of Minnesota remains locked in a bitter dispute with the White House and federal law enforcement agencies over widely conflicting accounts and interpretations of the killing in Minneapolis of a nurse by immigration and custom enforcement agents, ICE agents, you'll hear them referred to. It's interesting in that individual instances that are happening in individual states in the United States are front page news in an Irish newspaper, the lead story in RTE, Sky News, BBC and all of that. But despite a mammoth snowstorm sweeping across the United States, protests and vigils took place in San Francisco, New York, Washington and Los Angeles in the hours after Alex Pretty was shot dead during a street struggle on Saturday. The 37-year-old lived locally and worked as an intensive care nurse at the Minneapolis Veterans Affairs Hospital. The fatal incident was captured by video footage from multiple angles, which contradicts assertions by Kristi Noem, Secretary for the Department of Homeland Security. And this is the problem I see with the way the world is now. And it's not just the United States, it's here. In that instantly, you know, the US, right up to the White House level, were referencing this guy as a domestic terrorist, that he was intent on mass casualties, you know, real proper top-level official statements saying that. And then conversely, you have people saying, well, this is Trump's America. He was a completely innocent victim. And, you know, ICE needs out of Minnesota and so on and so forth, you know. And the truth is somewhere in between that. But politically now, opinions are completely and utterly formed by what your political beliefs are. Do you know what I mean? So even very intelligent people that can see that this guy wasn't an actual threat as such to ICE agents, he'd actually been disarmed, and maybe someone didn't realise he'd been disarmed or saw the gun that he was that was taken from him, and they shot him. You know, they shot him, and I'm sure there was no intent, but there was no threat to them either, right? So that's the truth. But at the same time then, and this is a very American thing, you've got someone going to a demonstration with a gun and a spare clip. Now, they're not going there to shoot anyone, I'm sure, but why would you turn up and confront and face off against ICE federal agents, especially with the reputation, with a gun in your pocket or in your strap? Do you know what I mean? Like, that is not really what we would know as protesting, is it? He had the phone in his hand. He went up, he pushed the phone into their faces whilst another person, in defence of another person, right, struggled, taken to the ground. This is an ICU nurse packing a gun and a spare clip, which he was entitled to have, by the way, but it's a strange way to approach a peaceful demonstration. But as I say, then on the other side, you know, there were five or six officers around him. They'd taken him to the ground, they'd disarmed him, and then they went on to shoot him. So honestly, the way I would view it is there's a lot going on there that shouldn't have gone on. But unfortunately now politics is such and opinions are such that the truth is lost in all of it. The truth is lost in all of it. We'll never really, really know, if you know what I mean. There'll just be people claiming it one way or the other. And on it goes. And it's going to be very hard for the family, very hard for the family. But it's definitely going to be one of those milestones in Donald Trump's career as president. It will blow up to that extent. The Irish Independent this morning, the cost of accommodating refugees last year is to hit another record despite government efforts to curtail costs. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan has revealed that almost €950 million was spent on the accommodation of refugees and persons seeking international protection by the end of October 2025. This comes amid calls for spending to be better scrutinised as new figures obtained by the Irish Independent show costs surpassing €1 billion for the first time since 2024. There clearly is a few people making a great deal of money. Ultimately, it's up to the government how that money is spent. But people are buying houses for a couple of hundred grand and making millions and millions out of them every year. So there's something amiss there, isn't there? Well, the expected increase in the 2025 calendar year is despite concerted political efforts to curtail costs, such as through the purchase of City West as a dedicated state-run centre. But that's only the tip of the iceberg, isn't it? The Irish Daily Mail reports that almost a third of primary schools have seen a sharp rise in the number of pupils absent for 4 weeks or more, 20 days, in the wake of the pandemic. Patterns across primary and secondary school children taking days off have grown worse over two recent academic years and show no signs of reversing course. A worrying report on school absenteeism has found. I'm not sure about linking this to the pandemic, to be honest with you. I don't, and if anyone's listening that can, I'm not sure I really can see the connection. You know, children move on so quickly, and our kids now who are 10 not going to school more now because they were kept out of school when they were 5 or 6. Do you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see the connection there. But this is what this study reveals, that there is a connection to COVID. We're going to have a more detailed convo about that later on. But the number of primary schools with chronically absent pupils, those who miss 20 days or more, which totals 4 5-day school weeks, rose by 30% between 2023 and 2023-24. 22, 23 and 23, 24 school years, while more than a quarter, 27%, saw an increase in days lost per student. As I say, a lot of it's been attributed to the pandemic. I don't really see that connection, but I'm open to be proven on it, influenced on it, sorry. And also, the one thing is certain, deaf schools or children that come from less well-off backgrounds are more likely to miss school, and they're more likely to miss school for unexplained reasons as well. So there you go. Fianna Fáil are taking a hammering in the polls. Their support stands just 15%, remarkably. Fianna Fáil's support has plummeted by 3 points. This is according to the Irish Sun and all the papers today. As questions swirl around Micheál Martin's leadership of the party, a Business Post Red Sea study revealed that the majority of voters want the Taoiseach to step down as leader of the party in the next year. The state of the party's research found that the two coalition parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, are at a combined record low of 33%. Obviously, Fine Gael doing the heavy lifting in that combined figure. Fianna Fáil's support is at 15%, its lowest since the 2024 general election, and down 3 points since the last such study. Deep down into the article, it will tell you that Sinn Féin have actually gained a couple of percentage points too. They're at 22-23%. So they're doing all right. But Fianna Fáil a while hammering down to 15%. So that leaves Fine Gael then on 18%, doesn't it? What's that down to, I wonder? And lastly, I don't understand why people do this. Some people just want to risk life and limb, and lots of people want to watch that happen. A rock climber has scaled a 1,667-foot skyscraper without a rope, harness or safety gear. Alex Hunold conquered the Taipan 101 or 101 building live on Netflix yesterday, the 40-year-old American said after, "What a view, it's incredible, what a beautiful day, it was very windy, so I was like, don't fall off the spire. It was I was trying to balance nicely, but it was an incredible position. What a beautiful way to see Taipei." I don't know why people do things like this, but he did it. And lots of people watched. There's ladders all the way up the tower. I don't think he used those, though, which would have been much handier, wouldn't it? Just climb up, run up the ladder. But anyway, maybe he did. I didn't see it. It would have been a bit of an anti-climax for Netflix. But is that entertainment to watch someone? Is that entertainment, watching someone potentially on the brink of falling to their death? I don't know. It doesn't feel like entertainment to me. Councillor Micheál Colin McGillan-Aspig joins me on the programme now. Thank you for joining me. You look under pressure, Micheál. Are you all right?
I have my daughter to take to college, okay, to Letigannon, and I have me in Lourdes council meeting. So my apologies.
No,
yes,
no,
under better pressure.
No, it's okay. You're at council this morning, as you mentioned, and you're calling on the local authority to immediately delete all of its official accounts on X, formerly Twitter, and cease any future official use of the platform, and also to publicly state it's doing so. Why?
Well, I think it's very clear. I think anybody that has been following the news and maybe follows Elon Musk as well would have seen that this last while that there's an app on X that, to my understanding, I don't have X, is that you can strip children naked, you can strip men naked, and you can strip women naked. And as we know, that any images of children of sexual nature is against the law. We see scores of people on a fairly regular basis being arrested and brought to court with having images of sexual natures on their computers. And I just think that it is sick, twisted and unmoral that somebody believes that this is a challenge to free speech, that they can create images of children for their own sexual gratification, mm-hmm, for women or men to be stripped naked and held on your own laptop or computer isn't against the law as of yet. And it's really important that the Free State Government does bring in legislation that makes it illegal, the idea that somebody can take somebody's image and then transform it into another image for their own, like I said, sexual gratification. as wrong.
Yeah, and I think everybody would agree with you in relation to that. I will say, though, X has brought in measures since that actually has limited the ability for users to do that. There are other AI softwares that maybe the council are using, ChatGPT, Gemini, that you can still take an image of an individual and put them in a bikini or disrobe them to a certain extent, right? So why X? X, as many would see it, is often the quickest way to get information out there for those that need it. If the council isn't there, it creates a vacuum, right, where someone can purport to be the council or put out misinformation that's not being corrected on that platform by the council. You know, is it not the responsibility of the council, whether we like it or not, to be where other people are? And there are lots of people on X that never engage with any of that content. Why should they be deprived access to the council?
Well, first and foremost, what I would say is that I think you stated very clearly there that they limited it. They haven't taken it away. What can a sick and twisted, perverted individual or a group of individuals, obviously, who created this app, need that be on X or any other social media platform? And I do believe very strongly that it needs to be a strong message sent that we here in Donegal, within Corleacombe Donegal, do have morals and we do have principles, and we wouldn't like to be seen using platforms that others may use for their own sexual gratification. Of children, of women, of men. And you're correct. You're absolutely correct. There are other platforms. I've been a victim of it myself in the past number of weeks where my headshot has been taken and put onto somebody else's body. And that's sexual harassment, actually. And I'm actually talking to discussing this with others around the possibility of a legal case again on this.
Well, with that in mind, though, Micheál Colum, would it not be more practical for the council to take a very strong stance on the broad general misuse of the internet? I mean, everyone uses Google, for an example, but Google is the pathway to all manner of disgusting content if you wanted to view it like that. Would your time not be better spent saying that, right, let's send a strong message to the government? The government were very quiet when all of this exploded. There was not much talk of what sanctions or punishment of X. We host all of these companies in this country. So rather than picking X out, would it not have been more practical to say, right, let's, as a council, send a strong message to the government, commission a man, etc., to actually ensure that we use the power we have as the hosts of these companies to make a strong statement at the very least?
Well, I think every mile you have to start with a step. And I think this is a step forward. We've seen other councils raise this question as well. And I do believe that it's a positive step forward, that any idea of being able to strip human beings, and especially children and women equally and men equally, and like I says, to use them for your own sexual gratification is sick, twisted and unmoral. And we need to look at what X is now used for. And you're correct in what you says, that not everybody uses it for these purposes. But if you look at the narrative that has been pushed, to my understanding, off Elon Musk, is right down that far-right fascist tunnel. And also the algorithm, which has clearly been focused towards young people. These, I believe very strongly, are people of no morals, that they're driven by their own narcissistic manners.
I just want to put one question to you, though, right? Because whether we like X or not, I'm off X myself, right?
I just find it
just too toxic. Now, what I will say, no, I'm not here defending X, and I never did, but what I will say, the people of Palestine,
no, you're not.
The people of Palestine, the people of Venezuela, the people of Iran and many other countries, the only way they have to get information out about what's happening in their countries is through X. And that's its primary usage in these places, i.e. without X, we wouldn't know half of the stuff that's going on in these countries. So with that in mind, would you be okay for X to be banned access for the people of Palestine, for the people of Iran, for the people of Venezuela that have been able to get their news out there to counter the Western narrative?
Yeah, and also the people of the streets of Deira or Balfarsta, when we're talking about oppressed people and the Greek Avon too, and the political prisoners both in Ireland and what's happening with the hunger strike in England. But no, I don't use X. I like to think that I'm quite well informed of what's happening to oppressed people in Palestine, or need that be West Papua or Venezuela or the occupied six counties or other working class issues within our own country.
But how do you think that information is getting out of those countries?
But as I find myself that I'm quite well informed to other platforms that I think doesn't use the app or the AI.
Can I ask one more question before I let you go, right?
Sorry,
Do you use Telegram?
No, I don't use Telegram.
So where are you getting your information from?
I generally get my information from,
Facebook?
TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. And also WhatsApp, because like that I would be on quite a lot of group chats around working class issues, around poverty, around other issues.
No, I understand that. It's just all of the platforms you mention. TikTok is responsible for the ruination of young people's mental health and the sexualization of young girls.
Doubt about it.
As I say, I'm off X. I go on X to have a peruse, but I don't contribute or really consume anything of any note on it. It's just interesting that you should choose that platform. Listen, thank you so much for your time. An interesting conversation.
Just like anything, I think it's a positive step forward. I hope to get the full support of the other councillors today. I'd like to thank Councillor Declan Meehan, who will be seconding and speaking strongly in relation to this today. And I do expect that Corla Conda Gunnal will be doing, because I've been having discussions with the senior management on this, and I do expect them to do the right thing. And I will also be asking them to now also to share, once hopefully, fingers toes crossed, that this motion will pass around the other councils within the Free State.
Yeah, hey, the local authorities are going to love it, because it's another place they can't be held accountable. And ironically,
and a finishing point, I think this is pertinent. I think people need to be held accountable.
Well, you're taking them off the platform where they're most accountable.
There are other platforms that people can interact with council on. But the other thing is, which is really, really important, our council meeting today that starts in Lifford, Bikini, Gavog, there are other council meetings that happen in Clonlea or Letchkanal or Ballardingal, that the public are more than welcome to come to these meetings. I have fought for many years that these meetings in Lifford would be streamed online. I'm fighting for the local MDs meetings to be streamed online so people can see what's been said, or more importantly, what's not been said. But also the public has to take responsibility here too and start coming to the meetings there for the public to attend.
Have you seen the size of the county? We're one of the poorest counties. In the country, the meetings are on stupid times. It's a miracle we have 37, 38 councillors that can get the time to go to the council meetings. The job of the council is to make itself as open to the public as possible, and every single meeting should be streamed. And all of those committee meetings too, where big issues are talked about, having them in camera, absolutely ridiculous as well.
I absolutely watch it. And you know, Greg, I've been on your radio show loads of times talking about the importance of streaming these meetings online. But I'm also have been and will continue to advocate strongly for the public to come to the meetings. Eric Clohanlia, yes, members, fairly regularly. There's very rarely now that there isn't a meeting that somebody from the public are at our meetings. And I strongly believe, and even if you look in our own chamber in Lifford, it's very, very small. We need a new chamber to allow for people to be able to attend it. And if anybody has mobility challenges, it's not suitable for them. But again, it's really, really important that people get organised, get politicised, and get well informed on what's happening politically, locally, nationally, and internationally.
And very finally, I will say this, it's a personal choice whether an individual goes on X or not, or contributes to X or not. But what I will say, there's a lot of crap on it, but it's an incredibly invaluable tool for getting information to people, for organisations to be held accountable. And to be honest with you, every local authority should be on it, in my view. giving information to the public and allowing the public to critique that information and for it to come off it. Because a small corner of that platform is dodgy. Like every single social media platform that you use, WhatsApp is the biggest disseminator of child abuse images in the world.
And I also strongly believe that we need to take moral stands. I believe that X is toxic. I do believe that Elon Musk, this is my own personal opinion, is pushing the narrative of fascism. We see it right across the world. And it's been used as a political tool, and it's weaponized. And in the sense that it's been used to organise and to give out misinformation on what's happening around the world.
But now we're getting down to the nitty-gritties of it, really. We're getting down to the nitty-gritties, I think, of it now, because really it maybe is a more right-leaning platform. You know,
No doubt about it.
You know, so is this really...
But I don't believe that any left-leaning platforms that would be out there would actually use an AI tool to bring around
AI tools do the
a
same
way
thing.
That men or women can actually get some sexual gratification.
Of course,
all AI tools
allow that to happen, and it's an absolute blooming disgrace.
That's a learning for me. So, and I think it's sick, it's twisted, it's perverted, and we only need to look at our own history in this country, what so many, 1 in 4, has gone through over generations and generations.
100%.
And I think it's the moral right thing.
I'll tell you, next, get Roblox.
Sorry?
Get Roblox banned next, because that's where the kids are getting exploited and groomed.
I don't even know what Roblox is.
Well,
I'm sorry.
There you go. I understand that. Thank you.
And that's on me, and I need to inform myself.
Yeah, it's a very troubling space, and all the kids are on it, and parents need to know what's
going
on.
Sorry,
no need to apologise. It's just a chat, but it's an important one. Thank you very much indeed, Councillor Micheál Colin McGillan-Asberg, 086 60 25,000. Now, as you may well be aware at this stage, Highland Radio's third Hospitality Awards is coming up very, very shortly. And in fact, today is a big day in that process. We cross over now to Highland Radio's Sean Quinn. Good morning, Sean.
We're up and early this morning here in Ballybuffet.
All right, okay. So talk to us about today and the significance of today, Sean.
So today's a big day. We're halfway through the process for our Hospitality Awards for 2026. And today what we're doing is we're launching the voting. So we've been busy for the last two or three days over the weekend shortlisting businesses for the awards. And today is the opportunity where your customers can now vote for the businesses that have been shortlisted. And so it's exciting times. Last year, Greg, we had over 80,000 votes, which was phenomenal. And I think this year we probably could top 100,000.
Yeah, you have a number of guests with you there, people very much involved in this process now. Cahir Loch of Donegal County Council, Councillor Paul Canning. A fantastic initiative, I think, this is to recognise the amazing businesses and the services that they provide across our beautiful county.
Yeah, Greg, it's lovely to be here. And this beautiful hotel here, Jackson's Hotel in Ballybuffet, at this launch. The hospitality sector here in Donegal brings a lot of items to the table, and it's great to see that these awards are taking place. And I think we need to give back to the hospitality because they have given so much to Donegal in their services, and it's just not a 9-to-5 service, it's a 24/7 service that the hospitality sector gives to Donegal.
Yeah, it is, and a vital cog, in the whole success of the county.
Very much so, yes. They bring in a lot of revenue to the county, and they are big employers. I think they have over 10,000 people employed in the sector. So it's great to see. And they're also a social outlook for us all to go and have our functions, and we'd be lost without them. And they are what people comes back to. Like, the return visitors comes back to Donegal because of how well they are looked after in the hospitality sector. So it's fantastic to see this.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Donegal County Council, together with Fulcher Ireland, are our main sponsors. Efficient Renewables, Air Grid and Northwest Gas, obviously valuable partners as well. John McLaughlin is the Chief Executive of Donegal County Council. And John, if you don't mind me saying so, I think the local authority sort of being so involved in these awards add even extra sort of credibility to them, if that's the right way of putting it.
No, well, thank you for those remarks, Greg. And yeah, absolutely, we're delighted, along with Fulcher Ireland, to be the joint main sponsors again this year. I've been at it myself before. I think it's the value and on the night, the energy in the room, and the Paul Canning talked about the 10,000 employees. I think it's tremendous to be to recognising and supporting those people. And we heard from Sean about 80,000 voters last year and going to 100 this year. I'd encourage everybody to come out and vote. It's the one big night of the year, and it's a tremendous buzz on the night. But it's a chance to recognise all those workers, the workers who work. You know, it's not the 9-to-5 office jobs, a difficult enough sector, 10,000 people there. And it's a vital part of the tourism offering in Donegal, and we're very dependent on that. And it's a huge economic driver. And as you know, we work in Donegal Tourism with all our partners, and Associate Committee is a chance for everybody to participate with as well. And Council, you know, absolutely want to help lead and drive this together with the other partners, in particular Fulcher Ireland, who's in the room here.
Yeah, of course, and this is one night and a very special process. But of course, John, the ongoing two-way relationship between the council and the hospitality sector is 24/7, 365. It's well recognised, and as I say, it's a two-way relationship all year round.
Oh yeah, it has to be two-way, and I suppose the council, by its very nature, has to be two-way with all its customers and citizens and the communities. We're here to serve them and do the best we can, and try to put some structure, I suppose, and provide some leadership and help to be the driver in looking into the future. And our investments today and the things we're trying to drive for the main projects around the county, particularly in the Wild Atlantic Way, you know, they're all for the future, and to bring in, I suppose, more investment, create jobs, and then other things flow from that.
Thanks, John, for mentioning the Wild Atlantic Way. You're making my segues much easier, because with us is Joan Crawford, representing Fulcher Ireland, manager of the Donegal Wild Atlantic Way. Joan, just looking through, you know, the categories and the shortlists or the nominees in these awards and other awards that we host as well throughout the course of the year, it just goes to show the diversity and breadth of the offering that we have in this county, which I think makes us the number one destination on the island.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, Fulcher Ireland's delighted to be part of the Hospitality Awards this year again. It gives us a real opportunity to recognise the hard work, you know, the innovation and the real high standard of customer care that enhances, like, the visitor experience here in Donegal. Like, Donegal has hospitality in its DNA. We're renowned for it. We're actually renowned for it.
And what we're seeing too is a great buy-in from not just the businesses but the public. You know, when there are hashtag initiatives throughout the course of the year to try and spread the Donegal message far and wide, it always proves incredibly successful, as successful as any county that's tried those initiatives.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And Tourism Ireland has a new campaign this year about Ireland Goes Beyond. It's where, you know, tourism providers are going that extra mile for their visitor. And no one does that better than here in Donegal. Like, tourism, 1 in 10 people are employed in tourism. We've 699,000 domestic visitors come to Donegal and 179,000 overseas visitors. They're really important to our local economy and really important to the hospitality industry in terms of revenue and growth and creating employment.
Sean, back to you, if you don't mind. We're talking about the process that's ongoing. So the nomination lines closed on Friday. It's great to see businesses posting up the flyers and what have you and say, give us a vote. The buy-in from the businesses at that level, I think, is really, truly remarkable, because they understand the significance of the use of social media and what have you, but also the recognition that they can get with winning one of these awards.
Yeah, and you know, Greg, it's grown from strength to strength every single year. We introduced the voting last year, but what we've also seen is the nomination period, where that's grown every single year. We had over 15,000 businesses nominated this time around, which is it's a phenomenal number. So people have taken their time, and the amount of comments that we got about how good businesses were, it's so nice to see that people will take that time to acknowledge these businesses who work really hard behind the scenes to deliver what we expect when we go in the door. So I think it's great in year three now to grow again, as we will. On Sunday, the 1st of March, Jackson's are going to have the place absolutely fabulous. I think you can see in the camera at the moment, even looking at the moment, it looks incredible. You put 500 people into that room, it's going to be absolutely amazing. So what I'd say to a business, in the coming days, you're going to get an email to say you've been shortlisted. You can go on to our website right now, and if you've been shortlisted, it's listed in each and every one. So you've got pub and bar, you've got tourism and entertainment, you've got the hotel section and the restaurant section, so four categories. We will send you a form then to fill out, and it's important that you get that back to us by the 9th of February. So it's a simple form, but what I will say is take time, give us the best answers that you can, because the judges will be scoring based on that, Greg. And coupled with the actual voting from the public, we will then ascertain who are the winners on the night. And I keep saying it every year, everyone's a winner. If you've been shortlisted, you've been recognised. But just put that extra effort in now from your form to fill it out the best of your ability.
Oh, for sure, because you could be one of our nominees, turn up on the night, and you could have got 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 votes. That is a win in anyone's book. Cathaoir Lough, I think too what I like about these awards, and I've said it before, it's there are broad categories there, but there's no hierarchy as such. You know, you can have a restaurant that's famous for a burger against a 300 bedroom hotel, theoretically speaking, you know. And I think it's good that all businesses of all sizes and all niches or mainstream are treated equally.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very difficult competition or voting process to win. I think the standard of our hospitality sector is second to none. Whenever you look at the hotels, the bars, the restaurants that we have in this county, and you travel elsewhere, they're not in the same league as us at all. So I think to come out as a winner and to be shortlisted, it's going to be brilliant for those groups, because they are in such a tough sector and they are very, very high competition within the county. And on that note, Greg, just I would like to thank Highland Radio for the promotion of everything that we do in the county. We do have the natural heritage in this county, and it's the promotion that we do ourselves and yourselves, which is a great bonus to us, and we're so lucky to have Highland Radio as our front runner in the county.
All right, well, there goes the tough question I was about to ask you. John McLaughlin too, obviously, you know, a lot of these businesses are catering for the Donegal population, Derry, Tyrone and those that come in, but they do play a massive role in tourism, don't get me wrong, and we have seen great advances, I think, in terms of our tourism offering in recent years, and some more big plans to come. So if I could look at the hospitality section in a tourism focus just for a moment, you know, the county-wide offering is only getting better and better and better, with some significant projects down the line.
Yeah, Greg, yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, in fairness for hospitality, we're really looking at three areas. One's the overseas visitors, hundreds of thousands coming in every year. Then there's from elsewhere in Ireland. And then there's our own local community here, all served by the hospitality sector. But in terms of the projects, yeah, we're trying to get the bigger projects, and the bigger projects take a long time now with the consenting and approval process. As you probably know, we've won at Malin Head, Dunree, Sleeve League is a huge success, Mount Errigal a huge success, and we need more. And we're working those, and sometimes for a number of years, we're hoping every year brings further near the end game there, and there will be a game changer. We're also trying to link in with Northern Ireland in the Giants Causeway route, and having all that joined up. And we're trying to really trying to get visitors north of the Galway line to come on up towards the north. And what we need is attractions all along that route, things to see and do. And that we're trying to do our part in Donegal, and been well supported by the full council here in Fáilte Ireland. And now we just need to get them over the line.
Yeah, and Joan Crawford, it's not just having the attractions as well. If I could just focus on tourism for one more moment, especially given the fact that you're manager of Donegal Wild Atlantic Way and representing Fáilte Ireland. But in terms of the length of this season, it genuinely does feel now that we are Easter to Halloween almost, or even beyond. So the efforts of this year with initiatives, they don't necessarily be seen in the summer of this year, but it's down the line. And you're always, aren't we, trying to get more people in for longer periods of time at different times of the year, enjoying different things?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, Greg. You know, we've launched a new tourism strategy, and the whole focus on that strategy is regional dispersion. So the focus is going to be on the northern half of the Wild Atlantic Way to increase those visitor numbers. And you're so right, we've been a seasonal destination for so long, and the focus now is really looking at those shoulder season months and how we can stretch out that tourism offering and getting businesses to stay open longer and keeping employment in those businesses throughout the year. So we are looking at a new capital grant scheme to encourage visitor activities and attractions. We're very lucky the department announced a $400 million spend in terms of tourism, so there's confidence in the whole area. And we're looking at new markets as well, Canada, China and India, but we won't forget about mainland Europe, who's really important for us here in the Northwest.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. Joan Crawford, manager of Donegal Wild Atlantic Way. Cathaoir Loch of Donegal County Council, Councillor Paul Canning, and Chief Exec John McLaughlin, thank you for chatting to me. Sean might have further questions for you, I don't know, but we really appreciate your time on the show this morning. And Sean, really, you know, it was interesting to broaden out the conversation there, and John McLaughlin pointed out quite rightly there's at least three prongs. The prong, I suppose, we'll talk to now this morning are those everyday customers, the bread and butter of a lot of these businesses. We're in and out of them all year round, and they, not exclusively, but they are going to do most of the voting over the next couple of weeks, and it's important they do so. Just to reiterate that, Sean.
Yeah, it is, Greg, and rightly so, because you know, they, as a customer, you actually keep this business going, and businesses need more customers. They need new customers, repeat customers, and as I always say, you can never talk to your customer enough. So if you've been shortlisted, go and ask for that vote. Don't be scared to ask for it. Go onto your social media. You can download the link from our website as well. Go and ask for that vote. You deserve it. The service you give is phenomenal. So it's very easy. Go on to highlandradio.com. You have up until the Monday the 9th, so that's 2 weeks today. It will close off. And we'll send all the information then to the judges. We'll count the votes that come in. There's going to be thousands of those, Greg. And then we all look forward to the 1st of March in Jackson's Hotel on a Sunday evening. I just want to take this opportunity to thank the council and Fáilte Ireland for their generous sponsorship. I want to also acknowledge Safetec, Northwest Gas, AirGrid and Efficient Renewables for their category sponsorship. We're delighted to have them on board again. And it looks, you know, we're going forward now. It's going to be an absolutely brilliant night. And we're going to have on the night 40 winners. But really, we're going to have over 100 who are winners in the room.
And if businesses are very, very busy, of course, they will be contacted by email. If not, they can check the shortlist. They're live now, aren't they, anyway? So there's plenty of information there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They will, by tomorrow, close of business tomorrow, they will have received an email. If you've seen your name and you haven't got an email, please get in touch with us. But I think we have all the contacts that we need. So you should have it by tomorrow. And that gives you 13 days to complete and return to us.
And one final thing. It's actually a fantastic night out. And people will enjoy it. John, are you going to make it this year?
Yep.
Good stuff. I'll have a special joke for you then.
He's so going far to McElhenney's now to buy the suit.
John's going to try it on for you, so to have to lose some weight.
Oh, no, you're looking well. But as John would say, there's many, many fantastic suppliers right around the county, isn't
there? Yes, that's right.
Okay, listen, all of you, thank you very much indeed. I know you have to make your way to Lifford as well, so we won't delay you any further. Thank you very much indeed. And Sean, the go-to place now, the website, right? Highlandradio.com.
Highlandradio.com. Let's get voting. Thanks a million, Greg, for coming.
Thank you so much indeed, Joan, John, Paul, and Sean, and the team Anya, I think, and Joe Dex on tech as well too. Lots of you messaging in on our socials as well as through the other channels, by the way. They're not being ignored. I will get to them as we head into the second hour. I live on the Rathmullen Road, and the state of the village and the road to Remelton is disgraceful with potholes. This is one of the basics we need to get right to get tourists to come and stay. Yes, indeed. On the calls for the council to come off the X platform, Greg's right about no censorship on X. All other platforms are censored, which means, you know, you can't have a system. Now, listen, can I park because I think people know, listening to this show, how strongly opposed I am to the doctoring of images. We talked about it extensively. So, but I want to separate that out. You know, what's happening with social media is people like it when it's of their sort of political thinking and then dislike it when it isn't. And I'm not saying that's the case with our earlier conversation, but there is no doubt it was a bit lefty and now it's a bit righty. That being said, as some listeners point out, there is left and right there. It just depends on the algorithm and what you interact with. What are the platforms where people can interact with the council, asks a listener. The council is wrong, as you can only interact with planners, motor tax, or any department of in the council on certain days. Why is the council chamber not accessible? And another, I'll be able to stay wonderfully informed on everything. I've been off Twitter since he bought it. Right, OK? That's fine too. And we all have opinions. Welcome into the second hour of the programme. It's time to say good morning to Brendan Devaney as we preview tonight's DL debate. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, Greg.
Great to have you on the programme. Can start with the ladies, if you don't mind. The campaign in Division 2 is underway. 2-11 to 1-6, they beat Westmeath. And that game, wasn't it played under the new rules, which are promising a quicker, more physical game? Some of the 12 rules certainly add to that. So it's a good advancement for the women's game from what I saw, some brief clips.
Yeah, brilliant to see Greg Brady's performance from her side, particularly in the second half. It was level at half time. So in the second half, they outscored Westmeath 2-5 to 3 points, which was a brilliant second half. But yeah, you look at it, Greg, the ladies' game, no more than the men's game, got very tactical. And you could see each team was setting up this bank in the middle of the scoring zone and just denying teams scoring opportunities. So you're seeing from years gone by, there used to be huge scoring in the ladies' game. It was very exciting. It got very, very tactical. So yeah, there had to be rule changes, no more in the men's coming in. And certainly James Daly's side got the best of that. And brilliant to see their way to Monaghan now next week. So great start from them.
I'm not sure if it was last season or the season before, but there was this talk of transition, you know, with a few of the veterans stepping out, new players coming through. This is the season really, certainly if it wasn't last, whereby, you know, this team needs to show what it's capable of.
Yeah, certainly. And listen, from the brilliant side that we had, it was knocking on the door of an All-Ireland, you know, right at the top of it. Obviously, there was a massive change then, a whole load of new players come in. So there obviously was that period now where it's down to James to build that side and to take the team back up to the next level again. And he's got off to a good start.
Yeah, hurling now, Donegal and Tyrone this year in Division 3. It was a tight game, as was being predicted. Donegal, though, scored a couple of vital scores late on, and maybe the final scoreline doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah, much like the ladies, Greg, unbelievable second half. Donegal and Tyrone going down from Division 2. The big thing for Donegal is to get back up there. But, Greg, you know, for Donegal to be in with those sides in Division 2, the work that Mickey McCann's done there and that the lads have put on has been absolutely phenomenal. I mean, they've just taken Donegal hurling to the next level. You know, bit of a disappointment going back down, but they did mix it last year. They want to get back up there. Obviously, that's the progression. But certainly, people were saying this was going to be a very tight, tough game. So the way Donegal, you know, away from home, what they did, it was phenomenal. And, you know, Tyrone hit the first 3 points of the second half to bring it level. And after that, the Donegal just completely wiped the floor with them. You know, they had 323 at this time of year is phenomenal scoring. So, yeah, listen, well done, Lee McGinn. Brilliant start from them.
Yeah, and while it might seem like a step back, this is really part of a broader story of the advancement of Donegal hurling, isn't it? Even if it means a step back for hopefully just a season.
Yeah, certainly. And I suppose you look at the experience and the abilities in there, but there's a lovely, I suppose, wave. You look at Setanta, what they've done in Ulster, then Burt as well. You know, so Donegal clubs are really doing well in Ulster. They're flying the flag and they've really raised the profile of it. I suppose all those small bits, Craig, you know, when you're going away to teams that you think historically you just can't compete with, slowly Donegal are chipping away at that between club and county. And they're saying, listen, we can take these days, we can step up into these different divisions and hold their own. So, yeah, you know, and that takes massive work, but certainly, say, for between club and county, it's a great time for Donegal hurling currently.
Yeah, chilly all evening in Croke Park. Fair play to all the fans that made their way down, and they weren't disappointed either. 120 to 20 points. The final score in Donegal's favour, of course. Michael Langan, man of the match down there. But it was a solid performance. It's a good team Jim McGinn has put out.
Yeah, it was a strong side, Greg. We obviously seen a huge attempt in the pre-season to blood new players, and they all coped brilliantly. You know, 78 players come in there, and every one of them, you know, there's none of them looked out of place. But of course, Greg, away from home, Division One, it wasn't as if, you know, we could maybe take a chance on things, because you're coming up against, of course, Ger Brennan, new manager into Dublin. He, of course, wanted to get off to a winning start. Dublin were going to be formidable opponents in there. But, yeah, we've seen some brilliant play in there, Greg, at times, particularly in the first half, maybe when we should have went down further in front. And it looked with the breeze that we certainly would. Like, the feeling was up in the press, Greg, that Donegal could run away with us. But we've seen a complete flip of that. And it's funny, Greg, at half-time, you can imagine we're going in at half-time fairly happy. Everything looks like we're getting the better midfield. We're causing loads of problems. The breeze was the only thing I think affected us being further ahead. We got the late goal as well, which was massive from Shea Malone. Brilliant to see. And it looked like at half-time, it was all Donegal. And then you got to remember the Dublin dressing room going to be a bit hurting. There would have been a bit of fire in there. And in the National League, when you get that bit of a fire at home, you can. Dublin come out, really went after us. And Bratnick came on and was brilliant, you know, hit 5 points. And they really asked a lot of questions at Donegal. There was a period, Greg, just when it came back to four, Dublin had two quick fire points. They were one in all the kickouts. We were having trouble getting our kickouts away. They had possession across our D. It could have went to three, and we were in trouble. There was about 7-8 minutes to go. There was a misplayed pass. We got the ball up the pitch, and Conor Donald won a free from us, and we went back to five. And I think there is where, I suppose, from Dublin's perspective, they'll think they could have maybe come back and got something. But listen, as you said, Keelan McGonigal, 100 games, fair play to him. What a brilliant servant he's been for Donegal. So, yeah, some great performances right across the board in there. You know, Finn Barrow did a great game. Ryan McHugh was unreal first half as well. Mourinho was brilliant. The goals, too. And his place kick in there coming out, hitting the 2-pointers, phenomenal. But, yeah, Langan, Darrell Boyle had a couple of crackers as well in there. So, yeah, some great performances.
Yeah, exactly. And those moments, those pivotal moments, it's not luck. That's where the manager comes in, isn't it, with resilience and belief and kicking on. What is the strategy for this campaign? Brendan, no manager's ever going to send a team out to lose, right? But is it to secure Division One status and not necessarily win the thing?
Yeah, definitely. Listen, Greg, I covered the league finals last season. It was very notable that the Offaly-Kildare game was a brilliant match, the pre-one, but Kerry and Mayo were in the final. And Greg, it was like that. It was like a pre-season game because they both, like Mayo accidentally kind of fell into the final. Kerry, I suppose, if you look at it in terms of like winning it, Greg, but in terms of, say, Kerry, you know, their pathway in the Munster finals, and they've got an easy run. They probably end up playing Cork in the final, so they'll actually want tighter games in the league. Whereas Ulster teams, you look at it from the get go, there's a load of big battles in there. So I think for the Ulster teams, get Donegal, I think, but like last year, Greg, if we can get safe early, you'll see Jim play a lot of these players, and it'll be great for them to get more game time, of course. But that's the big thing for Donegal. You know, of course, they've Kerry coming up.
Well, that's it. Father Tierney Park next Sunday. Kerry v Donegal, Donegal v Kerry, Donegal, the home team, of course. Great to get a win on the road. What a way to start the first division for Donegal. But what then is this game then, given the context that you've just outlined, right? It's not like Donegal have set their stall out. We've seen the quality of the team against Dublin. So we're going to put it up to Kerry, no doubt about that. What's Kerry's approach coming into Ballyshannon?
Do you know what, Greg? This game is just about Ballyshannon. There's no more bigger connotations to it than that. It's just about getting 2 points, you know, no matter what it is now. Everybody will build it up in that. Donegal, I suppose, tactically against Dublin, came out with man for man. They didn't go into the zone. They did fall back into the second half and went too deep for me in terms of where they were. Now, that could be just you're sitting on the lead that naturally you'll drop back in a bit. But certainly it was very evident that Donegal were going to go man for man. They're going to push out and go after teams. But this game, Greg, obviously we've seen with Kerry with what's happened. They've wiped the board in terms of championships and club championships. I mean, they're coming up the road now. Roscommon nearly beat them at the weekend. Greg, and no disrespect to Roscommon, you've got to say it's more about Kerry coming slowly into the season. So listen, they'll come up the road. If we beat them, Greg, I think we will beat them. If we do beat them, Greg, it just is that league game. It won't matter really anything about the All-Ireland or championships to come or anything like that. It'll just be 2 points. There'll not be much noise about it from Donegal. So I think it's all about just the game in Ballyshannon and Donegal getting 2 points.
It's fascinating to get, if you could get the mindsets of the various managers heading into and away from these games. But anyway, it's all going to be teased out on the DL debate tonight. As we mentioned, reflection on the county hurlers, the ladies and the men's, all in action, and some great guests this week. Two players you've played with, in fact, Kevin Cassidy and also Kerry great Seamus Moynihan, some of your guests. That's all right.
We'll have some more as well, Greg. Do you know what? You know yourself, Greg. Time is the enemy. And I know you're down to 2 hours now. You really fight it. But
leave me alone, bro.
Sorry, lad.
Hopefully they put you down to half an hour.
We must see for another hour. I'm going to do a good shot out now and cozy up to you. But, Greg, listen, the way time is there, right? See Kevin Cass on mine, and we'll have other interviews, and we'll have a couple other people come on in the night. But particularly when Seamus Moynihan comes on there, Greg, absolute legend. You talk to anybody around, he could be in your greatest all-time team of GA. Many people would put him in there. So whenever he come on, I said, you know what, I'm just going to leave the show to exactly know that I have enough time to chat to him. Me and him, of course, played for Ireland together. Top lad as well off the pitch. He couldn't get nicer. So he doesn't really do much media, Greg. I pulled a bit of a favour. Tommaso Shea's coaching Kerry under-20s. Mike Frank Russell's away to Tenerife. These are the things in the background, Greg, that we do to get the show going up. So Seamus, come on.
All right, it's all live after 7 o'clock, after the 7 o'clock news tonight, and then available for you to listen whenever you wish on a podcast. Thanks, Brendan.
Cheers, Greg.
Bye-bye. Professor Eimear Smith is Research Professor at the Economic and Social Research Institute. Good morning, Professor. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. New information out today that shows over a third of children in DESH schools have missed 20 more days at school, and that they have the highest level of absence compared with 17% of other schools. What do we know about this data that's been gathered, Eimear?
This is administrative data collected by Tusla Education Support Service, and they have been doing this every year for many years. And what we've seen has been a significant increase in school absence rates at both primary levels since the pandemic.
And are we using the pandemic as a timeline or as a driver of this?
I think it is a driver. We saw a big spike in school absence in 21-22, just coming out of the pandemic. But that's improved slightly, but we're seeing that even the passage of time since the pandemic isn't enough to make a difference. Between 22-23 and 23-24, we see only very modest improvements in absence levels. And we're seeing that a significant minority of schools are actually seeing an increase in attendance problems.
I was talking about this a little earlier, Professor, and I can't see the connection between a 4 or 5 year old being off because of the pandemic and a 9 or 10 year old not going to school because of that, or a 7 and 8 year old and a 12 and 13 year old, if you get where I'm coming from. Do we need to make sure that we're not we're not actually misappropriating the reason or attributing the reason to the wrong thing?
I think there are potentially different reasons for different age groups. Mm-hmm. Obviously, absence at primary level, especially among younger kids, is more determined by parents than it is at second level. I mean, we can't definitively say what's going on, what the reasons are with these data, but we know from other sources that there's been an increase in emotional difficulties among adolescents. We've also seen an increase in depression rates among girls, teenage girls. So some of this does seem to be manifesting itself in school avoidance or school refusal.
Yeah, and we also
know...
Sorry, go ahead, No, please, go ahead.
At least anecdotally from schools, they tell us that, you know, the pandemic meant a kind of a disruption in the relationship between parents and school, and that parents became, some parents at least, a bit more willing to keep their kids out of school.
Mm. We know some of the reasons why children don't go to school, because it's the reasons are given to the schools. But there's an awful lot of children that aren't attending school that we don't really know why they're not attending school. This is information we need to sort of get to the bottom of as a society, I think.
Yes. I mean, at primary level, the biggest category is illness. But next to that, then, there is what are called unexplained absences, where parents don't give a particular reason. And that's the biggest group at post-primary level. So, you know, we're not getting a good handle on what's really lying behind this level of absence.
It is more likely that we have a higher level of absenteeism in DESH schools. And they often, obviously, families... less well-off families might send their children to DESH schools. That's why the schools are there, right? What can we take from that? I mean, we have the data, right? But can we extrapolate that at all, or is that the job of other people?
Okay. These are school-level data, so they give us the average patterns across different kinds of schools. But we know from other research using Growing Up in Ireland that individual-level family circumstance can be a barrier to school engagement. So... poverty, low levels of parental education, maternal depression, trauma, you know, so for example, bereavement or addiction or other difficulties in the wider family, that these all act as a driver of school absence, and they're kind of shaped by socioeconomic circumstances. So schools can make a difference. They can make school a better, more welcoming place for children and young people. But there are barriers that are societal that need kind of to be tackled through child poverty policy and the provision of mental health supports for children, adolescents and their families.
Professor Emer Smith, thank you for your time. Professor Smith is a research professor at the Economic and Social Research Institute. On YouTube, hi, Greg. Just on the last points, could you ask John there why they don't post the MD meeting minutes online for all MDs? We can dig into that. I don't know exactly what the reason might be. Dahi says, tourism, not much of that left in the country. Poor old Ireland, 300-400 a night in a hotel. Great value for money, all right. I see where you're coming from. Tourism is still very, very strong, though, if the truth be told. I stayed in a hotel in Galway Saturday night a couple of Saturdays ago. I know it's January and it's dark and miserable, but it was under €200. It's still a lot of money, but split between two. And it was actually on Air Square, so I didn't think it was terrible. You couldn't do it all the time. But anyway, Dolores says, Greg, I'd like to know, please, why are the people called far left and far right? It's so degrading if you open your mouth and you're tarnished with, you're one of them. Well, if someone, that's what people might use as a slur against you, Dolores, it doesn't mean anything at all. Far right, far left would be people with very extreme views on those sides of politics. But you can have, you know, conservatism, liberalism, you know, right-leaning, left-leaning. I don't subscribe to that language, to be honest with you. Never really did on this program. Sometimes you have to use it because it's descriptive. But also, too, there are people that are very happy to be far left or far right. So someone using it as a slur really could be misplaced. So you can have certain opinions, and those opinions could be classed as right-leaning or left-leaning. But then if someone wants to maybe shut you up, maybe that's why they might use far left or far right as a slur, or you're woke or you're ultra conservative. You know, these people weaponize these words, and often it is to so you keep your mouth shut. So I suggest you don't keep your mouth shut and don't worry about it. Right, so on the last Monday of every month, we're bringing you a new feature called the Myth Buster, which is designed to address misinformation and misconceptions within local communities in Donegal. It focuses on issues related to migration, migrants and minority groups, with the overarching goal of fostering understanding, inclusion and social cohesion. Misinformation can create barriers between new and settled communities, leading to misunderstandings and divisions, and the initiative aims to break down those barriers by providing accurate factual information, encouraging open dialogue and answering questions that often go unasked in public spaces. And by tackling these challenges at a grassroots level, DLDC aims to strengthen community relationships and promote integration throughout Donegal. This morning we're joined in studio by Sibu Chuma, who is Donegal Local Development Community Connector. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
Good morning, Greg. I'm good, thank you.
It's good to have you on the programme. You are originally from Zimbabwe, now living in Donegal.
Yes, for 3 years now.
Okay. I think this is an interesting feature for us to have here, an interesting conversation. And I think regardless of what people's beliefs are, people should be interested in conversation, right?
True.
Now, sometimes people, there are those, even by the simple fact that I'm speaking to you about these issues, mm-hmm. will find an offence in that. And this is part of what we're trying to do here,
that
isn't
is
it?
That is true.
Yeah, because last time I checked, me and you were two human beings, right?
Yeah. We are.
What has life been like for you since moving to Donegal?
It's been exciting, really. I think also I'll talk about this from the perspective of my role. It's been exciting to see how people perceive a lot of things. You know, just by the fact that I'm black, there are things that come with it, like you said earlier. And just by you being white, there are connotations that come with that. Mm-hmm. And being in this space has opened my eyes to a lot of things, and especially issues to do with misconceptions and misinformation, which is why we came up with this our program.
And presumptions too, because we are at a stage now in this country, I think, whereby mm-hmm. you might be here for 3 years or you could have been born here.
Mm-hmm.
But people will jump to a conclusion as soon as they
exactly.
see you.
Exactly. That is true.
Right. But I think that's worsening.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think that's improving, because what's happening is people can have, and people from all different backgrounds, by the way, mm-hmm. Races and creed, can have issues with immigration policies.
That is true.
It's not exclusive to white people, if I could be so frank,
definitely.
Right? Right, so what are some of the key misconceptions or misinformation that you've come across in Donegal? And we'll see if we can address them. Now, some people might go, that's nonsense, because I know for a fact that such and such happened in my area, so what is it talking to nonsense?
Yeah.
Listen, there's individual scenarios in all manner of things, right? We're just taking the general misconceptions. Right, so...
Okay, so
we've no houses because
those are the topical ones. But today I'm not going to tackle any of them because this is a series, like I indicated earlier. So what I'm going to do today is just give you a glimpse of what some of those are. And so every last Monday of the month, we're going to have people come in to talk about those myths. Every person is going to tackle about three of them, which will be closely related. For instance, someone is going to talk about issues to do with housing, like what you indicated earlier, to say IPAs, international protection applicants, are taking away houses that are meant for the Irish, or they are living in luxurious centres, direct provision centres. So we're going to have people come and talk about those. But I'm just going to give you a rundown of some of the myths that I've collected, which are going to be tackled. The first one being that Ireland is full, yeah? Then migrants cause house shortages. International protection applicants are here for social benefits. Male IPAs are not vetted. Africans account for the highest applications for international protections. International protection applicants are given free cars, and international protection applicants drive without Irish licenses. They are a burden to the health system. They contribute to high crime, and they are gaming the system. So it's quite like a broad range of them, which are going to be tackled every other month.
Yes, and, you know, if we did this last year, a lot of the things that you've claimed there might be coming only from people who have certain opinions.
That is true.
But a lot of what we may talk about now at this point is being talked about by national politicians. So the government strategy at the moment is to get tough. We are soon to have some of the strictest immigration laws in Europe, we're being told. The government every other day now are releasing press releases of people being rounded up and deported. There was one 2 or 3 days ago whereby we've rounded up 30 or 28 criminals and sent them back, right?
Yep.
So, as I say, last year you might be trying to offset some of what the general public might be saying and feeling. Now it's almost what the government is saying.
It is a difficult space indeed, Greg, because on one level, on one hand, you're trying to address issues here at a grassroots level, but then there's the top people, the politicians, who also don't seem to have it right. They are conflicting things that are said, and being in the role that I am is it's a difficult space, really. You are trying to bring the communities together, but then you have bigger forces that are saying something that is contradictory to what you're trying to do.
Indeed. And also, too, obviously, what is difficult at the moment is that you can make good money by being anti-stuff.
True.
Right? Yes. So people might be very vocal on social media because they hold beliefs, whether they, you know, whether those beliefs are true or not. But also, there's money in division and hate and clicks and spreading stuff.
So I think this is the premise of all this, to say most of these sentiments are fed by misinformation. It starts as misinformation. That misinformation is entertained, and then these actors, they take the misinformation and intentionally grow it into disinformation for their own intentions, for their own benefits. So if the public knows what is true from what is wrong, then it helps them to say, no, but then we know the statistics. We know what is true. So we know that you're just riding on this. So this is the importance of this series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also, too, what I find is that people, there's almost like collective punishment or collective responsibility. Now, you know, if we, and we will in down the line discuss sort of housing shortages, there might well be a case that a migrant family got a house, right? One case, I don't know, right? But we'll tease all that out down the line. But that is, that case is then used as if to say that is the case right across the board.
That is true.
So instead of cases being treated on an individual basis, an entire sort of group of individuals, that's the truth that's applied to them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to count. That's the difficulty you have to counteract. So you could have one Eastern European guy that's up in Letterkenny Court for a sex crime, and the internet goes crazy, and rightly so, potentially, right? But then you could have 20 Irish white guys and no one says nothing.
Yes.
So that one case is to collectively tarnish an entire group of
individuals. That is true, which is why I'm saying that when we bring things into perspective to deal with the statistics, to deal with the facts, it will demystify all these things that have been thrown up there in online, social media and all that. So I really feel that it is important for us to do this. And we hope that we're going to tackle these myths and get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy your job? Do you think you have a tough job? Do you think we do you think we can get to a point where you would like us to be? In other words, of better understanding, better integration, better relationships?
It is possible. I think it just starts with knowing that we are all human beings at the end of the day, which is why I feel that it is important to do this at grassroots levels. Because if you are talking about you and I, we meet at the shops. You have a neighbor who's maybe a migrant. You see them going to work every day. So it's easy for you to say, it's not every migrant who's here to sponge from the social welfare, because I see this man walking up to go and fend for his family every day. Mm. It's not like they are living off social welfare. So if we start here and then we grow into the bigger communities, it's easier that way.
Yeah.
I feel that it's possible to attain that.
But what I also want to balance out, right, because me and you are in the business of seeing perhaps the worst of things.
Yeah.
Right, okay,
yeah.
So you see the worst of it and you're trying to counteract it. I sit in this chair, so I get all the different texts and all that kind of stuff. But then there's also a separate, which I think needs to be recognised, lived reality, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in the hospital, 50-50 split, people of all different ethnicities and backgrounds working together.
Mm-hmm.
Where my son works in Letterkenny, his floor, people from all different backgrounds working mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
They go and play football together in the evenings.
Sure.
You know what I'm on about, right?
Yeah.
So there's an awful lot of that's happened for generations. Just integration, where
yes.
people just get on, right? And particularly amongst young people, they don't really know a lot of what we're talking about. So we have to be careful too, don't we, that we recognise that maybe the majority of people just getting on with life.
Yeah.
But there is a certain issue with a certain amount of people.
That is true. I think that's just how community is and
yeah.
how we are as human beings, as individuals. There are going to be those people who are really hard to convince, but then we have people that we know that, okay, as long as we get the majority to understand that at the end of the day, we are all human beings. We are just trying to live. We're just trying to get by. Migration has been happening over a long time. People move for different reasons. Some come here for security reasons. Then there are migrants who come here.
The overwhelming majority come in here on work visas. They all move here from European countries legally. The overwhelming majority of people.
Yes.
It's a very small minority of those that are here seeking protection.
It is. And that's why we need to put things into perspective and address the misconceptions. So in the coming few months, the whole year, let me say the whole year, we're going to be bringing facts and statistics.
Yeah, we'll look out with interest and I'll be there just to counter things and make sure everything's, you know, I'm sure it is, and try and represent everyone's views, because that's how we as a collective all speak to each other.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean us as an entire society. I don't mean is us in racial groups or religious groups. I'm on about us living on this one rock.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we look forward to that and see how things develop. Sibu Chima, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, Greg.
And we'll chat to you real soon. That is Sibu there, who's Donegal Local Development Community Connector. YX asks a listener, I get that you like to use Twitter, Greg, but at this point, it's the principle. The owner literally said that punishing, preventing CSAM is an attack on free speech when we all know this is absolutely not the case. Well, I don't post on X anymore. And I'll tell you, I'll be very honest with you why I don't. And it's not really for any moral issue, because the stuff I get very little extreme stuff, to be honest with you, because it's got an algorithm. And if you don't engage with it, you don't see it. So I see very little of that stuff on X. But really, the reason I stopped using it is because it was just a resource for national journalists. That's the God's honest truth. The only interaction I would get from them would be to say, oh, Greg, I see you posted such and such. Do you have a telephone number? And to be honest with you, I'm not a stringer for News Talk or RTE. And that's why I came off it, to be completely honest with you. And as I say, we've discussed in great detail the issues with X, right? I've rang a complete and utter strange person by accident there. You might just tell that person that I didn't mean to ring them. All right, it's still ringing. My apologies. Don't answer. It's okay. It's just Greg ringing by accident. I'm trying to do two things at the one time. That person, I rang them by accident. You might just say that we're not looking for them. Right, 086 60 25000 is our WhatsApp and our text number. Or you can give us a call on 074 91 25000. And just to remind you that you can email the show, and that is comments at highlandradio.com. Right, now where are we? Yeah, I explained why I don't use X. The councillor says on the issue of X, the councillor is jumping on the bandwagon. Many apps and programs have the facility to make nude images, including Photoshop, which is everywhere. Ask him what about being on T, having to get planning permission to host children in the Gaeltacht as short-term renters. You see, I just want to say one thing too. X didn't allow people to make nude images of others. What actually they did was put people in bikinis and compromising positions. And I'm not saying for a moment that that is in any way justifiable, but it's not quite what people were saying. Now, Letterkenny Memories is on tonight in the Station House Hotel at 8 p.m. Everyone there is welcome. Hi, Greg. Any update on the big 6-foot drop at Ballymacstocker Beach, Port Salon, at the weekend, where the sea reclaimed the sand from the beach there and left a 6-foot drop? Saw photos online. I did too. They were forwarded on to me. We've contacted the council to get an answer to that. On the United States, did you see Bondi said, we'll get ICE out if you surrender your voter rolls? It was never about immigration. This is terrorism and extortion to cheat the next election, because he's a license and a carry permit and was executed. He has the right as an American, literally what the Second Amendment, the Republicans are supposed to be all for. I get you, and I'm not in any way attributing any blame to that man. All I'm saying is that I am not American, and I consume a lot of American stuff, but I'm not in the position yet whereby I could see any logical reason as to why you might turn up at a public rally carrying a gun, to be honest with you. Right, Councillor Joy Beard joins me on the programme now. Good morning, Councillor.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to the listeners.
Thanks so much for your time. Right, the government's booklet on emergency preparedness, you want them to include guidance for people living in homes built with defective concrete. This ties in, doesn't it, I imagine, to previous conversations we've had and representations you've made about the safety of homes in extreme weather and what provisions are there for people who feel it's unsafe to be there.
Yeah, Greg, well, this is something I've been raising time and time again, but it seems to be falling on deaf ears, to be honest. We know the homes, as every month passes, they're becoming more and more structurally unsafe. You know, the walls cannot support the roofs. The walls cannot support the bison slab floors in many of these homes. So this booklet, you know, should include people living in defective block homes. And we know now that it isn't just a Donegal issue, that this is a national issue. So I believe there's justification for that to be included in the booklet, to give people a heads up, you know. This crisis goes beyond having a torch and a blanket ready in the event of severe weather. You know, people and families are now living in extremely unsafe, structurally damaged homes.
And these are thousands of people too, by the way, yeah. Just in case people who still think this is another county problem or another part of the county problem. We're talking about thousands of people here, thousands of homes and tens of thousands of people potentially.
Exactly, Greg. And just this, you know, last week I had somebody contact me. The gable actually gave way in their home. Now, that wasn't a storm event. So as these homes deteriorate further and further, you know, there's a big chance that we're going to have a tragedy happen in one of these homes. And we need to let people know where they can go for safety. And this is something I've been crying out for a long, long time. So I think this booklet can give advice, but we need to go beyond, you know, just having a torch and a blanket when you're in a structurally unsafe home, to keep people safe. And that's my priority, to keep people safe as possible.
But say the government heard your pleas and they said, OK, where would they direct people to go in the event of a storm?
Well, exactly. I've been saying we need emergency centres set up, you know, during the day where there's some place for people to go. Obviously, it's a different situation if storms occur during the night, because, you know, we have to have somewhere for families to go, and it isn't convenient maybe for a community centre to be open where you don't know exactly who's there. You know, there has to be that guidance given where they're to go to, you know, bed down for the night to ride out storms because their homes are too unsafe. And we have to remember there's people in mobile homes now as well. Like myself, last year, riding out a storm, red weather warning in a mobile home, you know, and it's a terrifying experience, I can tell you that. But in a structurally unsafe home, we must have solutions for these families to keep them safe. Mm-hmm. And that has to be a priority. And as you say, we are literally dealing with thousands of people.
And do you think
homes.
There would be a big uptake of alternative accommodation in reality, Joy? You know, when do you leave the accommodation you're in? Is it 2 hours before the red kicks in? How long do you stay? You know, what provisions? You know, like, I agree fully and I can understand yeah. fully exactly what you're saying. But yeah. if what you called for was actually put in place, would there be a significant uptake on it, or would people just batten down the hatches at home or in the mobile?
Well, I think there is a realisation with families too, Greg, that their homes are becoming more structurally unsound. You know, engineers have been calling it out now that, you know, people shouldn't be living in these homes, never mind during a weather warning, you know, especially a red weather warning, which does mean endanger to life. We've got to protect these families who we have to remember have done nothing wrong and are living in these homes that really a lot of them should not be living in because they are unsafe, you know, and unhealthy.
Mm. Okay. We'll see what comes of that. Thank you very much indeed. We'll make contact with the department to see if they've any interest in this. That's Councillor Joy Beard, who stepped out of that ongoing council meeting just to take that call. I appreciate her time. You might have seen on Sunday from the HSC, advice was sent out saying that 38 people were in the ED waiting for a bed. They were so sick that they need to be admitted to the hospital. But every single bed that was available in the hospital was actually in use, and efforts were underway to discharge people to free beds to get other people in. These figures are not the exact same figures that the HSC used. They're from the INMO. And they show that a total of today, 64 people are awaiting admission to a bed at Letterkenny University Hospital, 38 in wards or elsewhere, 26 in the emergency departments. That's a worsening situation, and you're being advised to avoid that hospital unless it is an emergency. And we will get to some of the comments that were coming in relation to that on tomorrow morning's show. But it is apparently past the peak of the flu. I'm not saying there's no flu about, right? But we're in a situation too where the HSE conceding that the hospital is full. It was full yesterday, 38 people waiting to get beds. And they were advising people that unless it's a non-emergency, you will be waiting an incredibly long time at the emergency department. So what do? Go to your GP? Well, the big convo is it can be very, very tough to get an appointment with your GP. And on it goes, it's this circle. And how do you get people discharged out of the hospital? Well, they need to be discharged appropriately and timely by the hospital, but they have to have somewhere to go as well. And we were chatting last week about the struggles in terms of people waiting for home care packages or care in the community that's non-acute care. It's a very complex matter, but one we'll get into, of course, as the days wear on. But that is where we have to leave it on today's programme. Thank you very much for listening or watching the show. We're going to be back to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9 a.m.